But we got started, Boker Tov. Okay, on behalf of Promotion, it's a pleasure to welcome everybody to Rev. Daniel Feldman as we start a five-part series on halacha and human relations. This topic cannot be overemphasized or overstated, and we all know about it and we talk about it a little bit, but it's very rare that I think most of us learn the halachot of interpersonal relationship. And in the lead up to Matan Torah, this is the basis of the receiving of Torah, Derech Eretz Kadma, the Torah, and Vahavta Lerecha Kamocha is the Klal Gadol Torah. So we've invited really the expert, expert in many fields, but in halacha and human relations. It was book, Daniel Feldman, Rav Daniel Feldman, the Right and the Good, Halacha and Human Relations, Divine Footsteps, and he spent much effort in this area, plus in other areas. I have his other sefer, his Bina Bisparim on classical sugyot, and Rabbi Feldman is a Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University at Reitz. He also teaches in the Sy Sim School of Business and the Wurzweiler School of Social Work. So real Torah umada, bringing Torah into the business world. And it's really a pleasure to welcome him. In addition to all his writings and teachings, he serves as the Rav, the spiritual leader of Or Saadia in Teaneck, New Jersey. And it's a pleasure. So we've had Rabbi Feldman here in Toronto. We've had him at our medical ethics conference, but this is his inaugural talk on Zoom, and it's a pleasure to have you. And Rabbi Feldman, bakasha, thank you. We look forward to learning with you over the next number of weeks. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kelman, for those kind words and for allowing me to join you here in this wonderful program. It is a special opportunity on many levels. And your point is well taken that this is a time when focusing on interpersonal Jewish law has particular value. And the truth is that comes from at least two perspectives, one that you mentioned that is more classical and another one that's more recent. And that if we see this period of time, if we see the counting of the Omer period as a time when we are preparing for the receiving of the Torah, so as you mentioned, certainly the idea that our interpersonal attitudes have to be in sync, and Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, as you put it, that we need to have the approach towards others that prepares us properly to receive the Torah. There's no question that's a reason to turn our eyes towards the subject matter, as we hope that we are really ready to bring the Torah into our lives fully. But also in more recent generations, so we know that Sfiras HaOmer has taken on a element of mourning as well, which is not in the Torah, but it's not in the Talmud either, but it's a later practice. And the strongest theory is that it connects to a plague, something we have, unfortunately, greater identification with right now, but it connects to a plague that struck the students of Rabbi Akiva, and in a very hard to understand association, the Talmud tells us that they suffered this way, al shelo nagu kavod zelazeh, that they failed somehow in showing respect to each other, something that's so hard to incorporate, so hard to appreciate how that could be. We know that Rabbi Akiva is most strongly identified with the idea of Yahavta Lareacha Kamocha, that you must love others the way you love yourself, whatever that means. Maybe that's one of the topics we'll have some time to focus on. And that, therefore, also requires us to look at that area with greater attention also, that if we are mourning during this time because of a lack of interpersonal respect, so there's no question, it doesn't need to be pointed out, that the goal of the mourning, it's a means to the end of getting us to pay more attention to this area. So for both reasons, and maybe there's an interconnection between them, that we should have a greater focus on figuring out how we relate to others and making sure that that is in a perfected state so that we can incorporate all the messages of Sfiras HaOmer. So it is a very appropriate time to give some special attention to that, and that's what I'm happy to do over these next few weeks. I'll just say by word of introduction that today our goal is to bring in an introduction to try to sketch out some of the principles. And as we'll see, I believe there are three principles of interpersonal halacha, and they affect how we relate to the details and the concepts that we'll talk about over the next few weeks. So today I hope to kind of lay the foundation with giving us these three principles and seeing how they could apply. After that, we will try to look at some more specific topics. I know that I still have to work on my interpersonal relationships. I haven't yet complied with Rabbi Kelman's request for a more detailed schedule of what will be the next topics, but I'm also open to some suggestions. So also, as Rabbi Kelman noted, I have a number of books, really three volumes, one on Lashon Hara as well, that touch these areas. So I'm open to some suggestions. So I'd like to try to be somewhat flexible and to try to leave some room for input as to what we talk about when. So that's at least my excuse for not having such a rigid schedule or a source sheet. So I hope you'll be able to work with that and to tolerate that and to consider that somewhat of a useful format. Also, I was told in terms of the questions that I should wait till the end as far as the questions are concerned. I guess I'll try to do that. But I guess if there's anything that's not clear, so then I guess by coming, if you're still here, you can moderate. But if there's anything that's not clear, I'm happy to address the question along the way. But otherwise, I guess that seems to be the policy that for the most part, we'll address the questions at the end. But if Rabbi Kelman is able to moderate, then all the better. Okay, so with that, so let's try to set down some of the principles of interpersonal halacha. And the truth is, it's really the very phrase, interpersonal halacha, interpersonal Jewish law, that already gives an indication of what we want to try to bring out today. Because there's probably an attitude that many have that halacha, especially in the rigorous, formalist sense that we relate to it, is not about interpersonal relations, that halacha is about Shabbos and is about kashrus and is about tzitzis and is about all of these areas of life where a very formal, detailed system of rules regulates what we do. But as far as how we connect to each other, that's not an area for halacha, at least not in the rigorous sense, at least not in the conceptual, analytical, and then formalist approach that we find in other areas, that halacha doesn't have much of a role as far as that part of life is concerned. And I firmly believe that nothing could be farther from the truth and that there is absolutely a role and a crucial place. I'm starting to hear an echo. I don't know if I'm doing something, if something changed. But there's that. Anyone else hear that? Okay. That there is absolutely a crucial role for a detailed and rigorous halachic approach in this area as well, and that is vital for who we are in this area and every area of life. So the first principle of our three principles of interpersonal halacha is that the interpersonal realm is no less important and is no less deserving of attention than the other parts of Torah. And we know this in so many ways. We know that the Luchos that we will commemorate on Shavuos, the two tablets are broken up into two groups. This is not just a later observation, but this is something that you already find in the medieval commentaries and the Rishonim, that the Ten Commandments are broken up into two sets of five. And how exactly we relate to the Ten Commandments, whether it's even a good translation, is an interesting discussion. But you know, there are 613 mitzvos, but the idea of Ten Commandments as 10 representative principles certainly a notion that we have, and that they are divided up into two halves, one representing our relationship to God and another representing our relationship to each other, is a way of equating them, is a way of saying that we don't have a complete connection to Torah, one without the other, that just as we can't consider ourselves observant and faithful to Torah if we are not committed to our relationship with God, so too if our relationship to human beings is without commitment and without attention, so then we are equally flawed in our connection to Torah, and that the two are considered to be equated. And we know that if we look to the Torah itself, so we find many, many mitzvos, we find many commandments that direct our attention towards how we relate to each other. We have many mitzvos that fall in this category of mitzvos bein adam l'chavero, and it doesn't take a lot to come up with some examples. So we know that we have prohibitions of stealing and prohibitions of hitting each other and an obligation to judge others favorably, and obligations of tzedakah and obligations of chesed, of kindness, and prohibitions of speaking in a disparaging way. It's not hard to come up with examples. We know that there are so many obligations and commandments in this area. And we also have, on top of that, we have many general commandments in the Torah itself that direct our attention in that way also. So the most well-known is, as we've heard, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, that we should love others as we do ourselves. A lot to talk about in terms of the interpretation of the application of that idea. But Rabbi Akiva, the same Rabbi Akiva, is the one who is associated with the statement, Zeh klal gadol b'Torah, that this is a great klal in the Torah. And it's important to translate that word, that it doesn't mean, okay, this is a big mitzvah, that's a good one. That's a good one. We like that one, but it means it's a klal. A klal would really translate as a principle. And that says the Sefer HaChinuch, the great medieval collections of comments and codifications of the commandments of the Torah, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that the term here is understood to mean that it's a principle. It's not just a rule like every other rule, even though it is a commandment that is counted with the other commandments, but it is broader than that too, that it's a principle that helps us to interpret and to understand other guidelines, and therefore it has an outsized role in how we view things. And it is beyond any single rule. It is a comprehensive principle of life, and that takes up special place in our understanding of Torah. And on top of that, so we also have a directive that appears in the book of Dvarim, that the Torah tells us that v'asisa hayashar v'hatov, that we should do that which is right, that which is yashar, which is straightforward, and also that which is tov, that which is good. So that is a beautiful idea, but it also seems to be a little bit vague and a little bit redundant. And that's a point that's made by Nachmanides, by the Ramban in his commentary, where he asks exactly that why do we need the Torah to tell us something like that, and what exactly is its point? It's both redundant and vague, because we have so many other commandments telling us that we should behave in an honest fashion and that we should be good. So why do we need this extra directive? And what does it really tell us? What does it mean specifically? And it's very similar to a more well-known question of the Ramban on another verse in the Torah that we'll actually be reading very shortly on Shabbos morning, Parshas Kedoshim, where the Torah begins that parsha with the phrase Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Kadoshani, that you should be holy. And it has the same problems the Ramban there asks. Why don't we think this is both redundant and vague? What does it mean to be holy, and why are we being given an extra mitzvah to be holy when the whole Torah is directed towards our goal of holiness. And he has a similar approach to both questions, that both when we talk about this mandate of holiness and this mandate of doing that which is right and good, what we mean is that we have to try to see the picture beyond the details, that the Torah is indeed full of details which push us in the direction of greater holiness and greater honesty and greater general goodness. But it's crucial that we appreciate that that's what's going on, that we see that all these details are coming together to create that message. And that if we think that it's possible to adhere to the details, but somehow find a way around them so that we could follow all these details, but we're people who are not holy, or we're people who are not straightforward or not good, whatever that means, something we'll have to try to understand in greater depth. But broadly speaking, if we don't have these values constantly in the forefront of what we're trying for, so then we're missing the point. And therefore, the Torah directs us to be aware of the broader picture and to understand that we are striving for holiness, we're striving for integrity, we're striving for basic goodness. And in the context of Kedoshim Tiyu, of holiness, he says that were it not for this commandment, you theoretically could have had what he calls a naval birshus haTorah, somebody who would be a scoundrel, who would be a rogue, and yet consider himself to be within the permission of the Torah because he found a way around all the details. So that is thwarted by this idea of a mandate of holiness. So too, we shouldn't think that we can find a way to live a life that sticks to all the rules, but is somehow less than fully straightforward and somehow less than fully good, and that we're doing okay. The Torah tells us, no, we have to have the appreciation of this value of honesty and goodness first and foremost. And that is part of what leads to the principle of Lifnim Mishur Sadin, that sometimes we need to go above and beyond the letter of the law, which sounds like a beautiful value, and indeed it is, but it's a complicated one because it requires us to try to understand what that means to go above and beyond the law if we are people who do cherish a system of rigorous halacha and the fact that we have guidelines and that we have rules to live by. So a statement that says that we should be shooting for something more than that we should be going beyond the rules, it's not so obvious what that means practically, and that's something which requires a lot of attention to. But on the surface, what it's telling us is that we should have this in sync, that we should follow the rules, but that we should also appreciate that we're going for a value system here, and that we should work hard to try to understand what the values are, try to understand what the underlying concepts are, and make sure that we are living towards them. So all of this crucial mandate and directive within the halachic system, and a very strong emphasis that the area of man and God and the area of people to each other are equally important, and we have to pay attention to both. So we have so many verses in the Torah that address us in this area, and we also have so many statements in the Talmud, and we have entire tractates that are devoted to how we relate to each other. And perhaps what's most well known among these tractates and the most accessible and the most widely studied is the tractate known as Pirkei Avos, which roughly translates to Ethics of the Fathers, and that might not be such a good translation, and that's something that we'll have to come back to also. But the very first Mishnah, the very opening statement of Pirkei Avos, tells us about the transmission of the Torah, that Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai. Again, what we will be celebrating on Shavuos, Moshe received the Torah, and he passed it on to Yehoshua, and the Yeshua passed it on, etc., etc. We have the whole transmission of the Torah that was given at Sinai. So that's a great thing to know. Again, we're going to be celebrating that. That's wonderful to be reminded that the Torah was given at Har Sinai. But it seems like it's misplaced, because if you're going to study the Talmud, if you're studying Daf Yomi, so you would want to know that up front. You would want to highlight this idea of the receiving of the Torah at Har Sinai from the very beginning. That's the step A of learning the Talmud. So the idea that it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that tells us this, which is way past the halfway point. It's not the first Mishnah in the Talmud. It's way beyond that. You've learned more than half the Talmud by the time you reach that Mishnah, much more. So why is it only then that we're told that Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai? And a number of the commentaries, the Bartanuro and the Meiri, explain that there is a need for an extra statement specifically here. Because if you're going to learn about Tefillin, if you're going to learn about Erev, or if you were just learning Pesachim, so you learn about the details of Chametz and Matzah. So, okay, so you understand that that's clearly religious material. That there you're talking about something that unquestionably is connected to Har Sinai and the receiving of the Torah and the ritual observances of Judaism. But if you're going to learn a tractate like Pirkei Avos, which tells you smile a lot, right? That is literally a mission in Pirkei Avos, that you should receive everyone with a happy countenance, that you should be careful not to embarrass people in public, that you should treat your friends honor the way that you treat your own. So if you read statements like that in a Talmudic tractate, so the instinct you might have is that what I'm studying here is how to win friends and influence people as recommended by the rabbis. That basically it's a book of self-help or of good advice that was written by rabbis, but it's no different than how to win friends and influence people, that it's not really Torah, that that's not really from Har Sinai. And therefore, the placement here is in order to make the point that no, Pirkei Avos also is from Har Sinai. It's also a part of what Moshe received on the mountain. And it's no less halachically weighty than everything else. So when you're learning about tzitzis or kashrus or Pesach, so you are studying the Torah. And when you're learning about smiling a lot and treating others with respect and judging people favorably and everything else that the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos take up, you're also studying Torah in the same way. This is also from Sinai, and that's not something to take lightly. And that actually goes to the point of how to translate the title, how to understand the idea of Pirkei Avos. And there are many who study Pirkei Avos during this time of year, and many also of the summer. Pirkei Avos is always in season for different reasons. But the idea of paying particular attention to this during Sfira, so that perhaps also reflects this kind of focus. And it's interesting, I'll tell you, when I was a kid, so I used to collect commentaries on Pirkei Avos. And when I got a hold of the commentary of the Vilna Gaon, I thought this is going to be the most fascinating sefer. This is going to be a razzle-dazzle book with amazing Divrei Torah, because everyone knows the Vilna Gaon was such a tremendous genius. So his commentary on Pirkei Avos, that's going to be incredible. And then when I started looking at it, so it wasn't such a razzle-dazzle book. It wasn't so exciting. And the whole commentary, all he does is basically quoting Gemaras. So he wasn't really giving any fantastic interpretations. There was no great Divrei Torah. All he was doing was quoting passages from the Talmud. And it was only when I was older came to appreciate that what the Vilna Gaon was doing is basically a thesis. And he was telling us what the title really means, that we translate Pirkei Avos as meaning ethics of the fathers, teachings of the fathers. The Vilna Gaon understood the word Avos differently, that Avos in Halacha, we find sometimes to mean general principles, like we have in the concept of Avos Melachos of Shabbos, or Avos Hatuma in various areas of Halacha. We have Avos meaning a general principle. And Rashi, in at least one place, understands that Avos is a way to represent that which is in the Torah itself, as opposed to that which is derived. So the Vilna Gaon was basically telling us that all of these ideas that sound somewhat fluffy and sound somewhat general that appear in Pirkei Avos could be traced to the Torah itself. And therefore, when he was quoting these Gemaras, he was quoting passages that were explaining, even if it wasn't immediately obvious, but passages that would explain how whatever idea it was that was being represented in that Mishnah could actually be traced back to the Torah itself, could actually be found in that tradition from Sinai. And that's what Pirkei Avos is teaching us. So it's calling our attention to the fact that we have this special connection to this area of halacha, and Pirkei Avos is not just about interpersonal halacha. So we have a lot of tractates before that that deal with civil law, that deal with interpersonal rules, but Pirkei Avos is going even beyond that. It is not just talking about liability for monetary damages or not stealing or issues of civil monetary law, but it's talking about even more basic day-to-day kind of interaction, how we judge each other, how we talk to each other, how we treat each other, even in ways that are not actionable in court, that you couldn't sue somebody over, that you couldn't collect damages for, but just go to our basic conduct. And that also is traced back to the Torah itself and should be appreciated the same way. So all of that is part of the background of principle one. Principle number one of our three principles is that interpersonal halacha is as important, is equal to any other area of halacha. It's all given the same weight and the same significance and the same importance in the Torah system. And all of that has to be taken very seriously and with great rigor and attention. And that's our first principle of interpersonal halacha. I know, again, I'm not supposed to take questions till the end. I see there are a few questions in the chat, but I guess that's also part of what we're supposed to look at the end. So I hope that's okay. But I hope so far what we're saying is more or less clear. Makes sense so far? Okay. So to move on to the second and third principles, it's going to be a little bit of a contradiction to what I just said, because we just established that it's all equal and that it's all on the same level. But principle two and principle three actually suggest that there are some ways in which interpersonal halacha is more demanding than the rest of the Torah. So it's equal and then more than equal. Basically, that there are ways in which we have to pay even more attention and it's more demanding and requires more of us in this area than even the rest of the Torah. And that's in two ways, which the two ways themselves are kind of opposites of each other, as we'll see. So the first way, our second principle, we'll start with a story that the Chafetz Chaim, it's probably a familiar name, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, who died in 1933, was the author of the classic work on the laws of avoiding disparaging speech, on the laws of avoiding Lashon Hara. And he wrote many other works as well. He also wrote a book called Avas Chesed, which is about the mandate of kindness to others. And he also wrote the Mishnah Berurah, which is the basic guide to daily life in terms of the laws of davening and brachos and Shabbos and the festivals and tefillin and the like. And he also wrote a book about the sacrifice. He wrote many, many books. So the story is told that people would come to his house to purchase his books. And one day, a businessman came to his house and he said, "I'm interested in buying all of your works. I want to buy all of these wonderful books, with the exception of Chafetz Chaim, the book about disparaging speech. I don't want to buy that one." So the Chafetz Chaim was a little offended. He said, "No, this is the book I'm named after. You know, how come you don't want to buy that one book?" So the man told him, he said, "Listen, I'm out there in the dog-eat-dog world of business. So you write about the laws of Shabbos. I think I can manage that. You write about the laws of tefillin. I can handle that. You write about the sacrificial order. It's not going to impact my life too much. But you write about I shouldn't speak badly about people. There is no chance in the world I'm going to be following this one. There is no way that I'm going to be able to stick to these rules. So I'll buy everything else. That one, I'm leaving." So maybe it's not so surprising that the Chafetz Chaim didn't accept that explanation. And he said, I still think you should buy Chafetz Chaim as well. You should still buy this book too. And he quoted a statement of endorsement by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Lipkin of Salant is known as an older contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim and was known as the founder of the Musar movement. The Musar movement, which has got a whole complicated history of itself, but was a part of a new approach to paying careful attention to issues of character, including interpersonal relationships. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was quoted as having said about the book Chafetz Chaim that this book is so important and is so valuable that it would be worth it if the only impact it had was that one Jew would read it and what? And change his behavior, perhaps you'd think. It would be worth it if it has an influence on one Jew, it would change his behavior. But what he actually said was, it's worth it if just one Jew reads it and sighs. What does that mean that he sighs? It means that he says that, oh, I wish I could keep all these rules, but I can't. Okay, moving on. So it'd be worth it for that. If it just gets one Jew to sigh, I wish I could do this. So that's very striking. And the truth is, it's not obvious that that actually makes sense. Because we have a general principle in halacha that we say we want people to be educated, we want people to know the rules. But if somebody is not going to be able to keep a certain halacha, let's say in the area of the laws of Shabbos, so sometimes we find there's a principle we say, mutav shiushogigin ve'aliyum mezidin, that it's better for people not to know what they're not going to keep, because then at least they won't be knowingly in violation. They won't be defiant, so to speak. That if you just are unaware, okay, so that's one level. It's what we call a shogeg. But to be aware and to not follow is considered to be a higher level of violation. So we don't always recommend across the board that it's good to know, even if you're not going to keep. It's not such a clear decision that that's in your best interest. So for the Chafetz Chaim to say, well, or for Yisrael Salanter to say that it's worth reading this book, even if it doesn't change your behavior at all, even if all you do is sigh and say, I wish, really? Is that so obvious? So I think the explanation can be traced to a statement of the Rambam, of Maimonides, writing many hundreds of years earlier. He gave us a principle which could maybe help us understand this story. And the Rambam has, as you know, many works. One of his, maybe not most well-known works, but a very important book of the Rambam, of Maimonides, was his introduction to Pirkei Avos. It was 8 chapters long, and it has the very creative title of the Shmona Prakim, the 8 chapters. So in the 6th of these 8 chapters where he introduces Pirkei Avos, the Rambam makes a certain statement, which some disagreed with, but it has a tremendous impact on the philosophy of halacha and in this area specifically. And he addresses a statement that you find in the earlier rabbinic literature. And the statement exists in different versions in different places, but the thrust of it is as follows, that there's no need, maybe there's no value, for someone to say, let's say, non-kosher food, cheeseburgers, that sounds disgusting. That sounds repulsive. I have no interest in that. So to take such an attitude, the rabbis say, there's no real value to that, there's no need for that. That rather, it's perfectly legitimate for a person to live 120 years and his whole life say that I'm very intrigued by non-kosher food. I've always wondered about those little White Castle hamburgers, what's going on there. I'm very attracted by that. But the reason I don't eat them is because Gezeiras HaMelech, is because the Torah asked me not to. I don't connect to it instinctively, but I stay away from non-kosher food because that is God's directive. So there's no mitzvah to say when you walk past Burger King and say, "Oh wow, two burgers, fries, a Coke, and a free car for 98 cents." So that sounds horrible. Who would ever want that? It's perfectly legitimate to say that sounds great, but Gzeiras HaMelech, God told me not to. So that's why I stay away. So the Rambam writes in this introduction to Pirkei Avos, says it's not true about everything. That statement is true about ritual halacha. And he uses there the distinction that we sometimes find, sometimes call them chukim u'mishpatim, where you have what we call statutes, the rules that we don't really understand, and the halachas that we do connect to a little bit more, that we do feel like we understand the logic behind them. So the phrase is also there, mitzvos shimios, mitzvos that we listen to and we obey because we follow the commandment, and mitzvos sichlios, mitzvos that we also obey because of the commandment, but that we understand a little bit more, that we feel that we have some intellectual access, that there's something that's rational that we can connect to. So the Rambam says that these are two different areas with different sets of principles. So when it comes to the mitzvos that we don't connect to rationally at all, we don't understand what they're about. So we're told not to mix meat and milk, or past Shabbos we read all the non-kosher animals. So we observe those rules, fine. And if we live a whole lifetime and we have a tremendous desire to eat cheeseburgers or to eat pork and we abstain for no other reason then God's command, that's fine. But he says, when it comes to the mitzvos sichlios, the commandments that we do have some rational connection to, that we can understand what they're about, generally, roughly speaking, the area of interpersonal halacha, so then we are supposed to develop a personality that is in sync with these values. It doesn't mean that it happens automatically or instinctively. It doesn't mean that everyone is born totally identifying with these ideas. But it means that there is a goal, that there is an aspiration that you will bring yourself into harmony with these ideas. So when you avoid hurting your friend or you avoid stealing, so it's not only because you are following a divine command just as a matter of obedience, but that you genuinely care about your friend and you don't want to hurt them and you care about their property rights and you don't want to steal from them. So ultimately, even if you don't start off this way, you are asked to develop a personality that connects to these ideas. That's how the Rambam understood it. And there were those who disagreed. So many years later, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who died in 1776. That's how you can remember when the revolution was. If you're in America, those of you in Canada may not have that association. But Rav Yaakov Emden, he had glosses on the bottom of the Shmona Prakim. And he wrote, what are you talking about? Don't we see that we say, L'fum tzara agra, that the more you have to overcome an inclination, the greater the reward is. And we venerate Balei Tshuva because they have overcome so much temptation. So shouldn't we say that if you are not in harmony with these values, that if you have to fight harder, so then we have greater respect and admiration for your accomplishment? So he thought the Rambam was incorrect. And others have come and commented that it's really two different tracks. It's one thing if we talk about reward, whatever that means, that's beyond us. But in terms of what are we looking for as personalities, what is the Torah trying to create? So it's asking of us that we should bring ourselves into harmony with these values. And the truth is, maybe it really goes beyond this as well. And there is a lot to say about how we interpret even the more ritual principles that really do connect, but it's just on a whole different plane. So especially when we're talking about the idea of the interpersonal principles where we can connect to what they're about in a more direct way. So then we really are asked to do that and to explore them and to try to derive what we can. So if that's the case, it tells us that when we're dealing with interpersonal halacha, it's perhaps more demanding than the other areas of Torah, because we are told to learn these laws not only so that we can follow them, but we also have to work even harder to try to understand the underlying principles, because they could potentially change our personalities in ways that are very rewarding and very necessary. So perhaps that's what the Chafetz Chaim was getting at when the Chafetz Chaim said, you should read my book on disparaging speech, even if you don't think you're going to follow any of the rules. Perhaps he also thought that maybe he would end up following the rules. It's probably also true. But on a base level, when he says, if all you do is sigh, all you do is say, I wish. So the point being that in another area of halacha, if it really was the case that you weren't going to follow whatever the laws of Shabbos, the laws of kosher, okay, so then maybe you are better off not knowing about them. But when it comes to this area, so we understand what we're striving for. We're able to see what the principles are that animate these halachos. And that has an impact on our personality. And that helps to bring us more in harmony with what the Torah is asking of us. So even if the laws of Lashon Hara, of disparaging speech, may still be beyond our practical compliance, but we'll be able to connect to what the underlying values are, and that is something that is productive and valuable, even separate from the actual performance. And that's a powerful idea, and that means that the area of interpersonal halacha really requires even greater attention than the rest of the Torah. And to go back to that first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, so, and what Pirkei Avos means, so before the Vilna Gaon in the medieval era, Rabbeinu Yonah, so he also understood that the title of Pirkei Avos is giving us more than just saying the ethics of the fathers, but it's referring to this idea of Avos as general principles, and that this area specifically has an impact for understanding of life that goes beyond what other tractates of the Talmud can necessarily provide for us. And he suggests that that's what the first Mishnah is telling us in the end. So we commented earlier that the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos begins with Moshe Kibbal Torah Misinai, but it also ends with the idea of Hevi gives this advice that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, or directives that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola had issued. And one of them was Hevi Mesunim Bedin, that we normally translate that to mean that we should be deliberate and reflective in matters of law. And that probably it means that if you are sitting in judgment and you have to deal with complex factors, so then you have to be careful and think about what you're doing. But Rabbeinu Yonah added an interpretation here that if you want to understand God, if you want to connect to divine wisdom, your greatest point of access is in the interpersonal realm, because we do have some kind of appreciation for what these principles are telling us. And therefore, have a mesunim bedin, that we should be carefully reflective on these ideas, because this is going to give us access to divine wisdom in a way that may not necessarily be possible in other areas of halacha. And that's a tremendous potential, and that's something that we shouldn't let fall to the wayside. Well, we should have an appreciation for that. So that's something which really gives us an extra level of responsibility. So our second principle here somewhat slightly contradicts the first principle. We say the first principle is that interpersonal halacha is equally important to the rest of the Torah. Here, the second principle is equally and a bit more, that it requires us to pay more attention to the area of halacha where we have greater access. And my Rosh Yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva Karen B'Yavna, Rav Goldvich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he suggested that that was also what is being conveyed in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. And just to say it briefly, it's a more complicated idea, but in the very beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, which focuses heavily on this area of halacha of interpersonal interactions, so the language of the Torah there is Eilah Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lefnehem. These are the rules that you shall place before them. And Rashi quotes an idea that Moshe Rabbeinu had to be emphasized, it had to be encouraged and pushed to go into greater detail in this area of halacha, and not to think that it's sufficient just to give a superficial overview of what's discussed there, but asher tosim lifnei, we need to go into great detail and context and make sure it's fully understood. And there's a lot of back and forth about that, but the Rashiv explained that the point was that specifically in this area of halacha, where the potential for bringing our personalities into harmony with the Torah is the greatest. So that's where the burden on us to study carefully and to explore everything that we can explore is even stronger. I would also just add, this is not to say that when it comes to the chukim that there isn't anything we could understand. For sure there is, and for sure that's also a part of Talmud Torah. The difference is that we have an advantage, we have a step up when dealing with the interpersonal halacha, because it's in a context where we start off relating to what's on the surface the purpose. When it comes to the ritual mitzvos, so we have to work harder to try to theorize as to what it's about, but there we do that as well. And just to mention an example from yesterday's Kriya Satar, I happened to speak about this in shul yesterday, but there is a non-kosher animal that's called the chasida, which maybe is a stork, a bird that is non-kosher. Maybe it's a stork, maybe it's something else, but the name is a little surprising because you would think that that sounds like a very nice kind of name, that it evokes chesed, and it's not something we would connect to a non-kosher animal. And then you read Rashi. Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Chulin that indeed this is an animal that shares with its friends, and that's why it's called the chasida, that it does engage in chesed with its circle of friends. So that prompts the question, well then why is it non-kosher? So if it's a creature of chesed, so shouldn't that be a kosher animal, especially in light of the Rambam's theory that the animals, the birds specifically, that are not kosher birds are not kosher because they have qualities of cruelty to them. So if this is a kind animal, so then why should it be not kosher? And what many suggest is that, well, the issue is that its chesed is limited. It does chesed only with its friends. It doesn't go beyond that. And that word is the emphasis there, chevrusah, its friends only. And that's why it's not kosher. And I mentioned that I always find that explanation to be inadequate, because having limited chesed isn't clearly a reason why the bird should be not kosher, because all of us, as maybe we'll discuss if this is one of the topics we pick, that all of us are limited in our chesed. Chesed takes a lot of focus and attention and resources, and nobody can pay attention to everyone at the same time. And we do have rules of priority that aniya ircha kodmim, that we deal first with those who we are connected to. So all of us are going to direct our chesed first to our friends, ideally to as far beyond that as we can get, but we only have the resources that we have. So to say that's a reason to have an animal labeled as not kosher because the chesed is limited, still very difficult to understand, unless we appreciate that the message really is that the animal is still a predator, that this bird is still considered to be an achzar. And the fact that it's nice to its friends doesn't contradict that. And we're coming off of Yom HaShoah when we are reminded that there are people who were capable of the worst acts of brutality and cruelty and evil, and who also were nice to their pets and loved their mothers and were able to be kind to those in their circle, but still engage in acts of unbelievable cruelty and evil. It's not a contradiction. And therefore, if these animals are predators, so the fact that they may also be nice to their friends is not going to erase that, and that the chesed that we strive for is a chesed that builds upon a basic morality and care for others, and then goes beyond in terms of acts of kindness that are on top of that. So there's much to say about that, just to make the point that we're certainly not exempting ourselves from trying to understand the message of the chukim as well. But when it comes to the mishpatim, when it comes to these ideas that focus on concepts that start off in rationality, so then we have a leg up, we have an advantage in trying to understand the divine wisdom in that area, and that's something that we are encouraged to do. So the second principle is this idea that the obligation of Torah study is actually deeper in this area. And that's a big part of what we want to do, that we want to try to understand not just the rules, because it's not only about compliance, if it ever is, but here especially, it's not only about compliance, but to bring our personalities into harmony And into sync with these values is even more necessary than it is in the rest of the Torah. And therefore, our obligation of study is more demanding and requires us to go further. So now I have a question for Rabbi Kelman. So before we go to the third principle, so I can see it's getting late and I haven't taken any questions. So I don't know if we're supposed to have a rigid division from one section to the next.
It's not real. I would do quickly the next thing. There are not that many questions, so I would do the third principle relatively quickly, and we'll do a few minutes for questions. If we go 5 minutes over time, it's not the end of the world.
Okay, so the third principle, just to say a little bit quickly, is a little bit of the opposite of the second principle. So we said the second principle modifies the first principle. The third principle is the other half of it, basically. And there is a lot more to say about it, but I'll say it very briefly. So we just said that theory is more important in the area of interpersonal halacha. So now we'll say the opposite, that in a sense, practice is more important. And it's not really the opposite. It's just actually a stringency from both sides. And here to illustrate this, there is a passage in the Talmud in the end of the first chapter of Baba Basra that the Talmud discusses Penina. Penina was married to a man who was also married to Chana. Chana would eventually be the mother of Shmuel HaNavi, of the great prophet Shmuel. But she, for a long time, didn't have children, and she went through a very difficult time praying and hoping for a child. And her husband's other wife, Penina, had many children. And she used to taunt Chana. She used to give her a very difficult time emotionally and call to her attention all the time the fact that she didn't have children while Penina had so many children. And this seems like, and actually is, an act of extreme cruelty. It's unbelievable that somebody would do that. And yet the Talmud has what seems like a baffling statement. The Talmud says that Penina l'shem shamayim niskavna, that Penina meant well. But apparently she thought that if she would make things so difficult for Chana that she would pray even harder and ultimately she would get what she wanted. She thought she was doing something helpful by ramping up the pressure, so to speak. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the great Rosh Yeshiva and Mashgiach of the Yeshiva, the Mir Yeshiva, and his words are recorded in the classic, relatively recent classic Musar Sefer, Sichos Musar. Reb Chaim explained that you shouldn't misunderstand that Gemara, because it sounds like that the statement in the Talmud is defending Penina. Penina engaged in such cruelty to taunt the woman who was suffering this way. So to defend her, we're saying that she meant well and it was okay. So Reb Chaim explained, no, it's the opposite. The Talmud is telling us that it doesn't matter that she meant well, that it's not a defense. And indeed, we find that Penina was actually punished terribly for what she did. It's not a defense to say that you mean well. And Reb Chaim explained that when you're dealing with mitzvos ben adam l'makom, when you're dealing with obligations between you and God, so then God can credit your intent and can credit your efforts. And he knows, okay, what you're trying to do, and that also counts. But when you're dealing with human beings only know the effect that you have on them. And all they know is that they're suffering. And if you are inflicting suffering on someone else, the fact that maybe you mean well is not going to mitigate that at all. And he gives the comparison. It says, if you stick your hand in an oven and you mean well, when you take it out of the oven, it's still going to be burnt. It's not going to be any less burnt because you meant well. And so too, if you're inflicting pain on someone else, or if you are failing to help someone else, when you have a good excuse, so God knows about your excuse, but the person who's suffering does not. And therefore, there is a greater focus on practical results than there is in other areas of halacha, where God can credit your efforts and the results are, believe it or not, less important. And Reb Chaim wrote this relatively recently, but if we look back into earlier generations, so we can find that this is a principle in halacha which does seem to be consistent in many authorities and maybe could explain many sources. That when you have an area of interpersonal reality, an area of interpersonal halacha, so there is a greater focus on making sure it actually happens. And that other principles, which are sometimes there to allow for excuses, so to speak, or to allow for conflicts, And this whole idea that God can credit what you're trying to do, or for example, if you have a clash between two things, what takes priority? So many halachic authorities throughout the generations have worked off the premise that we prioritize that which is interpersonal, that which is going to involve someone else, because they have no ability to connect to the excuses, even if the excuses are legitimate excuses. But if they're suffering, so then the suffering is real, and nothing's going to mitigate that. So, for example, if you have two mitzvahs going on, calling your attention at the same time, so we have a rule that to osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, you're involved in one mitzvah, you're exempt from the second one. God understands it can't be in two places at once, and he credits you with what you wish you could be doing at the same time. But if the second mitzvah, let's say, is a starving person who needs food right now, or else they're going to collapse. So many poskim understand that you have to pay attention to that, because God can credit you for places at once, but the person who is in desperate need of your help right now can't do that. So this actually creates a greater responsibility in the area of interpersonal halacha to make sure, obviously we can only do what we can do, but to push as hard as we can within what we can do to make sure we actually get the results that we are bidden to bring about. So basically, just to recap, we have our three principles. Principle one, that interpersonal halacha is at least as important as the rest of the Torah. Principle two, which modifies that, is actually maybe more important as far as the study, that the study really requires delving into the understanding to the greatest extent possible and connecting our personalities to that study. And the third principle, which is the opposite half of that, that not only is the theory important, but the practicality is important in making sure that we actually bring about the results that we are mandated to do, because when dealing with human beings, that becomes a much greater requirement than dealing with an understanding and forgiving God who doesn't necessarily have to see the results for his benefit. So that asks us, A, to pay attention to this area of halacha, to pay attention to the theory, and to try to work to try to understand what the underlying value is, and also to try to get the details to make sure that we will bring about these results. And hopefully over the course of the next few weeks is what we're going to try to explore, both the theory and the practice, to try to bring us into harmony with these principles to the greatest extent we can as we anticipate the Kabbalah Satoru. Okay, Rabbi Kelman, what do you...
Thank you. Do you want me to read you the questions? Would that be easier for you?
Whatever.
Or you can look at them yourself if you prefer.
Okay, so I see some of these are observations, which I appreciate, but not necessarily questions that are looking for answers. Which ones are looking
for answers? It starts with David Eisen about the Luchot being the same size. I mean, it's an observation, but I think it's an...
Which one? I'm sorry?
That both the Luchot were the same size, but they're way less letters. Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tinaf only takes a few letters. That's, I think... Uh-huh. The Mabit, I think, has a comment on that. So carving the letter would have been much larger font to demonstrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did his ban on the Machaber to mean greater importance because it was much bigger. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, you know, the letters are small.
Low the bigger sign. It's also not a question.
To what extent is the target audience at Perkei Avot the general population as opposed to being directed to Dayanim?
So I don't think it's necessarily directed to Dayanim specifically. There are statements there which apply on multiple levels, and some of them are interpreted as having specific reference to Dayanim, but it's clear that the impact of most of these Mishnayos, if not all of them, is really to have a much broader message as well. There are sometimes when Dayanim are really acting judge, when we mean rabbinical course judges who are acting in a more focused kind of role, that's true of all of us. So for example, if you want to reserve that question, if we choose one of our topics, the idea of being dom l'chavzchus, of judging people favorably, so that whole structure is going to come out in a clearer way. So I think maybe I'll defer that question to that topic if we get to it. But I would say that, let's just put it this way, that I think the general population can benefit greatly from learning all of Pirkei Avos. In fact, in that this childhood that I mentioned before, when I collected all the commentaries. I had an aspiration at one point to write a edited, abridged version of Pirkei Avos for the non-Jewish population as well, because there's so much there that is so broadly applicable that wouldn't even necessarily limit it to Jews. But that opened up all kinds of other questions. But it would say that certainly for all of us, there is tremendous value to studying Pirkei Avos.
Okay, somebody asking if I think on the mitzvot, like sickly or on the Rambam, also seems more like a comment. He's saying the Rambam held in the guide that only the first two of the Aseret HaDibrot are mitzvot, you know, sickly. All right, have any comment on that, or I'll just...
Yeah, what exactly we mean by sichlios is a complicated question. Chukim and Mishpatim, there's a lot to say about this also. Chukim and Mishpatim are really just points along a spectrum, because there's no absolute chok and there's no absolute mishpah, which is also a part of it, and it's part of what we alluded to also with that aside about the chasida, that even that which seems to be chok probably has much that we can interpret and apply. It's just less front and center. And even that which we think we understand as a mishpat is also much more divine, is divine and is much more complex and beyond us than we also appreciate. So there are really no absolute chukim and no absolute mishpatim. It's really just a question of what we tend to identify as far as what we connect to, which is also something which is important to guide our learning in both senses of the word, that chukim, like we said, also leaves us much room to try to explore and to try to understand as best we can. And mishpatim, we have to preserve the mystery. We have to preserve the fact that we are dealing with divine instructions and not just principles that we could have figured out on our own, which is a part of that whole message of Moshe Kibbutz Torah Mesinai, that these are not principles of philosophy that we came up with on our own, just like every society did, but they are principles that are rooted in the Torah. But given that they address these aspects of our social reality, that our potential to try to connect to them and to understand them is much greater. But appreciating that there are really no absolutes on either side of the spectrum is a important axiom to keep in mind also.
Okay, good. Okay, this may be a sad comment, asking for a comment how unfortunately we often see people, I guess, who should know better, Rabbanim, who talk in ways against each other that are not in keeping with the, you know, dictates of Pirkei Avot and et cetera, if you want to comment. I mean, I don't know. That's why we're learning this. But
so I'm certainly not going to try to judge anyone right now. Right. And I'm not going to sign on to any premise of what is the reality or isn't the reality, because everybody is more complicated. But there's no question that questions like this come up a lot. And especially it's not going to do justice to it when we're ready over time, but I'll just say maybe as one word of introduction that I think, first of all, we'll see that it doesn't break down in any kind of clear categories as far as who's better at one, who's better than the other, but also within any given individual. So it's very rare that somebody is really so perfect in one area and perfect in the other area. And even if we may find what seems to be glaring examples, it's often more complicated than that in ways that really over time doesn't really allow us to do anything close to justice to. But I will say as a general rule that people are better at what's easier and they're less good at what's hard. And interpersonal halacha is for many reasons much harder. And it's harder just because it's more demanding, as we discussed. And it's harder because there's more subjectivity and more room for rationalization. And all of that plays a role. And I don't think there's any one individual or group of individuals that necessarily are immune to that reality. I think we all have deficiencies in this area. It may be that some of them are not as deficient as they look. It may seem that a certain action or pronouncement is lacking in this area, and maybe we don't see the full picture. Maybe it's not as much. Maybe it's our judgment, which is actually itself an example of a deficient Ben Adam L'Chaveiro assessment. But even if we acknowledge that there may be, or that, you know, clearly everyone, Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Sheyas Tov L'Echlos, everybody's imperfect. So whatever imperfections are genuinely there and we notice, So it's a reality that I don't think any of us are free from, that this area of halacha is harder. It's harder for all these reasons. It makes demands on us every second of every day. And it is more easy to rationalize, and all of us bring our own biases into this area. And therefore, it's going to be, by its very nature, much more complex and challenging. So I think that's something we have to recognize within ourselves, and recognize also if we see it presenting itself in others, that that is a part of the inherent challenge of this area, and why we really spend a lot of time working on it. And it's more of a constant call, and why we have a lifetime to try to strive to get better.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Somebody wanted to know for future session, if any ideas, you can email me, email to our motion, I'll pass it along. Although I do think Dan Le Kav Zchut, that's a great topic. If I'll throw in, you mentioned it, I think that's okay. Something we all deal with, when to judge people favorably and give them the benefit of the doubt, and when not, and how much, et cetera. But we are, as Rabbi Feldman mentioned, he's open to ideas, and he can give on topic a great share on any topic.
Well, I'm happy to put that front and center. Dan Le Kav Zchut. We can make next. But I should mention it's not a contradiction. These next few weeks, by the way, if anybody wants to be connected to the parsha, so we have Tezria Metzora, which evokes themes of Lashon Hara and Dan Le Kav Zchut. So those certainly are complementary topics. That certainly could be what's coming up. But also then Achar Mos Kedoshim. So Kedoshim has almost every principle that we would be talking about in it. So these parts also. So Dan Le Kav Zchut is in Parshas Kedoshim too. So either way, it's a good topic for next week. So let's start with that. Then after that, really, almost everything's going to connect to Parshas Kedoshim by its very nature.
Okay.
Yeah, for Chachamocha is in Kedoshim. Yeah, there's a lot of extra value for timing from that perspective also. And then Emor is where Sfira Somer comes in. Okay, so we have a lot of work to do. So
thank you very much. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you next week. And everybody can stay, take an 8-minute break. And Rabbi Liebtag will be starting at 11:15 on the Climbing Mount Sinai, Understanding Har Sinai, a detailed study of the partial the receiving of the Torah, mainly in Sefer Shmot in comparison to Sefer Torah. So that's going to start at 11:15. So we have a few minute break, and we'll see you all hopefully soon. And thank you very much. Tomorrow morning, Rabbi Ari Shvat is starting his 7-part series on various approaches on religious Zionism. Yom HaTzmud, of course, is this week, so we'll be having different approaches and analysis, development of religious Zionism. That's tomorrow at 11. Mark Shapiro will be continuing his series tomorrow night at 8:30 on his correspondence with rabbis. Tuesday morning, Ora Wiskin on how the Baal Shem Tov changed the world, major trends in Hasidic thought. So that will be Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. And then at 1:30, Lana Goldstein-Sachs will be starting a 5-part series on Megillat Rut, also the lead up to the Shavuot. So we got lots to keep you busy. We look forward to learning with you. And please invite your friends. And okay, we'll see you soon. Okay, thank you. David, you want to know B'chai Achicha Imach? Okay, there are all kinds of things. Save a life another. Okay, kidney donation. All right, we'll see. We'll take ideas, and we'll let Rabbi Feldman, weave it all together. Okay, thanks, everybody. We'll see you soon.